Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics.
Gentlemen, welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics. It's me, Mr. FSP. It's Vic. Holding it down by myself for right now. I will have my co-host, Jerry ATM Money, a.k.a. The Master, calling in later on. Also, we might hear from Mike Wright, a.k.a. The Bookie Monster, because, you know, he's got to make some type of call today. We've got a show lined up for you, and happy June. It is June 1st. It's kind of liberating for me because in several more days, I'll be headed back to the United States of the good old U.S. of A., and I'll be on regular time like you guys back there in the States. For all of my European friends and folks in Asia and Australia that listen to this show, we're still going to be kicking it live and doing what we do. It's just going to be, you know, a little more of me being on the same time length and time wave as you. If you want to call into the show, you can always dial 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. I promise to have a great show for you today. On today's show, we will talk about the LA Kings versus the New Jersey Devils, which is the NHL Stanley Cup championship match that's going on. I believe it's 1-0 in favor of the Kings. And the first game was a pretty good game. It went to overtime, 1-1, and the Kings pulled it out. And if I'm not mistaken, the Kings were the eighth seed out of the Western Conference to, go this far. And we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the matchups for the NBA playoffs. The Eastern Conference Championship going on right now, or going on with, the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat. Two teams that, you know, I have a question about that I want to ask you guys. Do you really want to see the Heat or the Celtics represent the East, or is it time for new blood? We'll talk about that. As well as the San Antonio Spurs versus the Oklahoma City Thunder, and how a 20-point victory sparked the Oklahoma City Thunder. But are the Spurs so complete that one game was just an anomaly? We'll talk about that. As well as, of course, fantasy football, guys. A lot of folks are already starting their leagues and drafting. I'm going to talk to you about it today, as well as Jerry when he jumps on the line. So we've got a jam-packed show. We're going to talk about some NFL OTAs and a lot more stuff. So stick around. I have no problem chatting it up in the chat room as well. I see I have somebody there, FF Bobby 24. I take it Fantasy Football Bobby 24. So if you want to jump in, FF Bobby 24, be my guest. I have no problem getting you involved. I prefer that you call so we can talk and it's just not me reading your text and regurgitating. But it is what it is, okay? So, first topic of the day will be hockey. Now, not too many folks are interested in hockey as of late, ever since they had the work stoppage, and it's been several years now. But there's, I guess, a lack of interest from a lot of folks in the States about hockey. Now, this is a story about the New Jersey Devils, who I believe were the number 2 seed coming out of the East, and the Los Angeles Kings, a storied franchise, Wayne Gretzky and all those guys, turning back into prominence or returning to prominence. I mean, is it that the Kings just got hot at the right time? Or is it something that, you know, it was destined to come about? I mean, think about it now. Two hockey franchises. One, the Devils, perennial losers back in the 80s and the 90s. All of a sudden, they're the number two seed coming out of the East, and they're kicking butt. And then they run into the Los Angeles Kings. Well, here's the Kings coach talking about the matchup and, you know, how both teams were very good in the first game and it went to overtime. Here's the Kings coach. As soon as the soundbite plays. Blog Talk Radio, I love you very much.
Obviously, nobody wants to be down 2-0, whether you're going on the road or going back home, either way. You know, so they're going to come out and fight hard. But, you know, we gotta bring the game that we know we can bring. We didn't bring it last night. I don't think they brought theirs either. You know, I think the pace is going to be a little quicker and, you know, maybe a little more physical. So, you know, we're gonna do our homework and watch tons of video and, you know, be as prepared as possible.
So, basically what's going on here is they were expecting a fight. Or a tough match. They got a tough match. And now they're down. I mean, well, the Kings are up 1-0. They're going to look at more film and try to figure out how to beat these Kings. The Kings play very solid team hockey. Now, I know a lot of folks are like, well, it's just, is UFC on ice? You know, you're slamming folks into the glass and blindsiding them and knocking them out. And really, the only team sport where fighting is condoned. I mean, think about it. It's really the only sport that if two guys are ready to square off, the refs aren't getting into it until it goes to the ice. If they're standing up, the refs aren't, you know, getting involved. They're going, well, let them go. They get their penalties. They go in the penalty box. You know, you play shorthanded for a while. But then you come back, and broken nose, missing teeth, all types of things. And it's crazy. But hockey is one of those sports that I see a lot on TV and probably is one of the best sports or the best sport to watch in high definition. You can follow the puck. Everything looks really, really good. And it's nothing that you can, I don't want to say just turn away from, but it's nothing that is not going to captivate you. If you can follow and you know the rules, such as icing and offsides and da-da-da-da-da, it's a sport that you can get into. I mean, I'm not a real big hockey fan. Don't let me fool you by saying all these wonderful things about it. It's just that this sport, it's a big business sport. I mean, really. I know that they went over a couple years ago and had a lockout and all this other mess over salaries. But then they came back and paid these guys crazy amounts of dollars. I mean, crazy. That's one way of locking up a player for the duration of their playing career. Now, that's another thing. For hockey to be such a violent sport and concussions and busted noses and missing teeth, guys play to their 40s, late 40s, or I'd say mid-40s in the sport on a high level. I understand the cardiovascular, the conditioning of it. I do that. But the violence in general, I mean, you've had Roenick, who's pretty young, but Dominic Hasek, I can't get his name right, sorry. I can recall Steve Yzerman. These guys were pretty old playing hockey. You can't do that in many other sports. You just can't. Another sport you can do this in is in mixed martial arts. If you have a certain style, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, most likely, and that's how I'm going to transition to MMA. Older guys that have been in the sport for a long time, you know, they've dealt with a lot of concussions, a lot of breaks, a lot of tears, a lot of sprains, but they adapt their style so that they can continue playing in the sport. And I wanted to give credit to the UFC for putting out a pretty good product on their last pay-per-view. Junior Dos Santos pretty much whooped up on my boy Frank Mir, who I thought was going to win. Frank didn't do what Frank should have did. Frank only went for a takedown once, and he made it a boxing match or a kickboxing match, and he thoroughly got his butt whooped, plain and simple. Now, oddly enough, last week we talked about how, or I talked about how UFC needs a star. They need a crossover star to get the ticket window bumping again and pay-per-view buys up again. And lo and behold, who do we see in the front row of UFC 149? The former UFC champion, supposedly current WWE wrestler, and I'm not sure if he's still doing that or not, Brock Lesnar. The man that carried the pay-per-view buys for the UFC for the past 8 years shows up at an event, and when Dana White was questioned about Brock's affiliation, he said there's a strong possibility that Brock might be making a comeback. I mean, think about it. Brock Lesnar left UFC, UFC because he was dealing with so many things and he was getting his butt whooped and real pain was getting brought to him. And he couldn't deal with some of the issues of the medical situations. I mean, face it, if you almost die a couple times because of your training regimen, it might be time to leave a sport. And that's what he did for UFC. He was getting pounded in the face, and he was a pretty good fighter, but not the elite fighter that he could be. So he went back to the WWE, and he proceeded to take a entertainment sport and try to, as he said, legitimize it and make it real. And he made it real. I mean, he cut open John Cena the three times that he faced him with real blows, not, you know, a fake razor blade or nothing like that. It was forearm shots that cut him open. Gave him stitches in his lip. I mean, he literally really, really, really made it a real fight. And that was probably one of the complaints that Cena and other wrestlers probably made, that, okay, Brock, you can't turn it off. He just can't turn it off. He wants to be real and violent instead of catch-as-catch-can. I stole that phrase from Jim Ross, by the way. So Brock Lesnar returns to the UFC to watch Junior Dos Santos versus Frank Mir. I know he wants a shot back at the title, and Frank Mir wants another opportunity to beat Brock. You know, they're 1-1, but Brock also wants to fight Junior for the title. Now, if Junior can keep Brock off the ground and just pound him, Brock doesn't stand a chance. But I don't think it's fair to have Brock come in there, and if he does return, and get a shot at the title. I mean, Mr. Verdum, who my son actually looks like, tested positive for a performance-enhancing drug and was subsequently banned by the UFC for 90 days. And, I mean, Alex Overeem, not Verdum, I apologize. I'm not trying to get another guy in trouble. But Alistair Overeem was actually in line for the next title shot, but got banned for performance-enhancing substances. And that would be a good fight, a good stand-up kickboxing K-1. I mean, Alistair is, I believe, a 2- or 3-time world heavyweight champion when it comes to K-1. And Jair dos Santos is a brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but most of his strikes come from, you know, standing up, punching power, turning fights into boxing matches / kickboxing matches. So that would be a good fight as well. I don't think it's the fight that the viewers would buy because it doesn't have the name that everybody recognizes. Floyd Mayweather, he goes to jail, turns himself in early in the day, in that day. He gets a manicure, tweets the pictures, then goes to jail. Floyd's going to come out of jail, headline a big fight, maybe Pacquiao, maybe not, and get paid and have every stinking person that likes Floyd Mayweather buy the fight on pay-per-view. Same thing with Mike Tyson. If you recall, back in the day when Mike Tyson went to jail, he was in his prime. Then when he got out, got his license back, you know, his first fight, I believe, was against Evander Holyfield where he bit his ear off, but it was a pay-per-view monster, because everybody wanted to know, did Mike Tyson still have it? Everybody wanted to see Mike Tyson fight Evander Holyfield. I mean, was Iron Mike still Iron Mike? But the polarizing character is what people bought the pay-per-views for. UFC does not have that character. John Jones, not a heavyweight, but a very good middleweight, the champion of that weight class, was their poster boy for being the good guy, gets arrested for a DUI, running his Bentley into a light post. But he isn't that big-name guy. Now, his brother, one of his brothers, plays for the Baltimore Ravens. The other plays for New England Patriots now. But there's still no marquee name in the UFC or mixed martial arts. There isn't that one guy that people want to buy. And I know that Strikeforce, they almost had the formula, but they tried to build Kimbo Slice into something that he wasn't. But Kimbo Slice was a street fighter that got internet credibility because people saw him going around just random dudes and just whooping up on them. And when they signed, when CBS or Strikeforce signed him, CBS jumped on the bandwagon, and every fight that was on CBS had decent ratings and decent buys. The UFC doesn't have that right now. My boy Saint Pierre coming off an injury, hasn't fought in quite some time, and he's going to fight to get his title back or whatever the case may be. But at the same time, you know, he's been out of the game for a minute. Anderson Silva, supposedly the best pound for pound, hasn't fought in quite some time. So, you know, it is what it is. They don't have the money. But let me bring my boy in from D.C. It's my ace. It's the guy that pretty much, he's an executive producer. He is the executive producer of all of our shows. I like to call him the Bookie Monster. What's up, Black, what's going on? Okay, I guess Black can't hear me. Or he's at an event where he has to be muted, so I'll put him back on. Black, if you want to jump on, just hit the one button, and I'll bring you on, brother. All right. Almost 30 minutes into the show, so let me move on and transition from MMA and hockey. Let's get to something else. Now, I want to go to baseball, and I'm waiting for Jerry to call back in or call in because he's a New York Mets fan, and we're also playing fantasy baseball. And the news out there, guys, if you haven't heard, which I'm surprised you haven't, is that the New York Mets had their first no-hitter in 50 years. In their entire Met lifetime, or whatever you want to call it, they've never had a no-hitter. Almost had a perfect game, but Carlos Santana walked someone. Shouldn't have had a no-hitter. Shouldn't have had a no-hitter. One of my fantasy players, Adrian Beltran, was robbed of at least a double. Not saying it would have changed, it would have made a difference in the outcome of the game, but with Adrian on, most likely at second, maybe that starts the rally monkey. Maybe it starts the rally monkey. You never know. But here's Todd Ant of ABC News. He's going to talk to us a little bit about this big no-hitter that Johan Santana threw. As soon as my sound bite works. I love it when the stuff doesn't... I'm prepping and the stuff doesn't come. I'm going to try it one more time, guys. Here we go.
The New York Mets finally celebrated an achievement that eluded the team after more than 50 years. Gary Cohen on SNY TV, Seaver, Ryan, Gooden, and many others never did it in a Mets uniform, but Johan Santana finally ends decades of frustration.
This is very special, and I knew this means a lot to New York.
Mike Baxter made an acrobatic catch running into the left field wall, and there was a missed umpire's call, but Mets fans could care less.
Yay! Woo! I love the Mets!
Todd Ant, ABC Sports.
And there you have it. Johan Santana, first pitcher, you know, this was the type of pitcher that the Mets thought they were getting 3 years ago when he signed as a free agent for Minnesota. He came out in the season throwing pretty well and throwing pretty good. He didn't get the run support in his first game. I believe he's gone at least 7 innings in all but one game. And Johan he's getting strikes. I believe he had 8 strikeouts last night, and Beltran was 2 of those 8. And the guy, I'm not going to say he's a medical marvel, but all of these players that come back from Tommy John surgery, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago, he had been diagnosed with the issue of a torn ligament in your pitching arm, you know, it was little chance to none that you would return. Pretty much null that you would return and be a dominant pitcher. You know, Tommy John surgery has come a long way. Medicine has come a long way and has allowed these guys to become, you know, a great I don't want to say a great pitcher, but a great set of games to help bring their careers, you know, further instead of ending their careers. Johan Santana, he was a him. What's my man in Minnesota? I just had his name on the tip of my tongue. Liriano. I can't remember, something like that. Those two back to back were the aces of Minnesota, and they were the ones that propelled them into the spotlight. When Johan left, Liriano, he went downhill, and he ended up getting hurt, needing Tommy John surgery. And, you know, this was supposed to be his bounce back year. It isn't. But Johan Santana is doing pretty daggone good. You know, I really can't yell at the fact that he got the no-hitter. I can say it wasn't a no-hitter. It was clear to everyone but one referee or umpire that it was a no-hitter. And this brings up my issue about baseball. There needs to be some form of instant replay for regular plays that, you know, the umpire might miss. I know they have instant replays for home runs. I got that. Special situation. But just like in the NFL, I think baseball needs to have maybe a challenge flag. You know, a challenge flag for the skipper, for the manager. Let them throw it out there. And again, I'm not saying that one hit would have been a big difference in the game, but it could have started a rally. So let me bring in our one and only New York Met fan. I know he's going to say, well, you got to give it to them. They had, you know, 50 years or less, and I mean, hey, whatever. It wasn't a no-hitter. JT Money, talk to me, dude. Let me know how you feel about your stinking Mets.
A Washington Nationals fan. Don't be hating on my NL East team, the Mets. It's been 50 years in the coming. We have a bulldog. I've liked this guy ever since he's come on to the Mets. He's got a very bulldog type of attitude as a pitcher, which I really like in a pitcher. And he deserves every bit credit of this no-hitter, regardless of all the criticism that seems like always wants to knock when a team or a player does well. There always seems to be someone, and this time it's you, Mr. Vic, that wants to knock my man Johan Santana and the New York Mets down. He earned it. It is what it is. There is no instant replay. And just like the pitcher that had a perfect game taken away from him, this is a no hitter. It's in the books as a no hitter, first in Met history in 50 years. And it is what it is.
Yeah, you're talking about the Detroit Tigers pitcher. I believe it wasn't Slareth. It was, oh, my gosh. I know you're talking about, but the umpire made a very bad call. But I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I think it was Daniel Slareth. I think it was Slareth's son, if I'm not mistaken. But I might be wrong. I can't remember the guy's name. I got to look it up. But, again, I'm not saying the guy doesn't deserve it. He pitched a hell of a game, but a call was missed. And, again, that could have been easily a double and could have started a rally. Instead, it was called a foul ball, and Beltran proceeds to strike out, if I'm not mistaken, on the next two pitches.
Your boy.
Yeah, that you traded to me. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about since we're on baseball, because we're going to go to basketball and football in 1 second. Ladies and gentlemen, again, I sadly have to come on to this show that I run, I own, and bow down to an old, decrepit ATM. Because, you know, the ATM's in Deshaun Stevenson's kitchen. That's what they just installed Jerry in Deshaun Stevenson's kitchen. Did you hear about that?
No.
Deshaun Stevens, former Washington Wizard, former Spur, now New Jersey Net or the Bronx Net, had just put an ATM in his kitchen. And he's going to stock it with $20,000 every so often. so that he doesn't have to run anywhere to go get money. He can just go to
serious?
The ATM. Yes, this is a serious. I'm dead serious.
Oh, man. I tell you, it takes all kinds, man.
Hey, when you make money, and remember, he was the sixth man.
Right.
You know, so if he's got that type of money, he's made some very good investments. Now, of course, somebody might try to break in his house and jack his ATM now, but whatever. But anyway, what was I talking about before I went on that tangent? The baseball trade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have to come on this show and say that this old-timer, this geezer here, is winning in our fantasy baseball league. And now he's trying to take advantage of me again, and he might get his opportunity now that my boy Matt Kemp is back on the DL.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I'll let you finish.
I saw the trade that you sent me.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want Capuano. I want Justin in a deal. Now, here's the problem. I'm about to tell everybody the problem. We have a deal in principle. It's a 3-for-2 deal, but I'm willing to go 3-for-3. Whereas I send Matt Kemp and Hudson and another player to be named or pick to Jerry for Justin Verlander, Adam Jones, and Lance Lynn.
That's a lot coming from
me.
Well,
that's what I'm about to say. Jerry does not want that deal because he has to wait several weeks for Kemp to get off the DL. However, Jerry is already the number one team in the league. He leads me by 27 games. He leads the next opponent, which is in a different division, by 8 or 9 games, if I'm not mistaken. He has a powerhouse set of bats and pitchers. So in order for me to feel, and I'm in his division now, so in order for me to feel comfortable with trading the number two player in fantasy and my number one pick, even though he's on the DL, I have to get some of that power away from him. But he does not want to part ways with it. And then he wants to add Adrian Beltre, who I have, to his collection of bats, which would include Hamilton, which is – that would be 2/3 of the power threesome in Texas, which is a scoring machine. And he just wants to seriously, you know, do me like – Ice Cube with no Vaseline. I mean, death certificate. Y'all got to look up that reference if you're not in a rap in Ice Cube. O'Shea Jackson.
I'm giving you Adam Jones, who's just signed an $83 million contract with the Baltimore Orioles, who's having a very extremely good season, comparable right now to Matt Kemp, because his batting average, his power and RB average is comparable to Matt Kemp right now, who's on the DL, and there's no guarantee of when he'll come back. And I'm giving you two quality pitchers, which is going to weaken me in my pitching.
And
the trade-off is you're giving me Matt Kemp, and you want to give me Tim Hudson. What I researched and saw that Tim Hudson has been struggling as of late.
No, you requested Hudson. You wanted Hudson.
Yes, and that's why I changed the trade. I asked for David Price instead of Tim Hudson because I realized that I was getting the short end of the stick, and then you're trying to give me another bat, which I'm giving you two pitchers and a real good outfielder with multiple positions. And you're giving me back a DL, a questionable pitcher, and a questionable pitcher because he's been shaky. He has been shaky, and you know that. And then you want me to throw in somebody like A-Rod, who's not the A-Rod of old.
But I'm willing to give you A-Rod.
Well, the trade-off is this. I'm giving you two quality pitchers and a very good outfielder, and you're giving me two good hitters and a very good pitcher. That's the trade-off.
All right, so let's make this deal, because I got a soundbite from Adam Jones as well I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you David Price and Hudson and Kemp for Verlander, Lynn, and Jones. Now what you got to say? Because Price is no joke. He's their number two, and he's pretty good.
David Price. David.
Oh, now you gotta calculate and
No. I have to get this straight in my mind.
Well, let me play the soundbite while you think about it.
I don't have this to look at it in front of me. I'm thinking about it in the top of my head, so I need to visualize what you're
oh,
trying
now.
To visualize. Because I unlike you, Mr. Vic, I don't make a decision right away. I won't say I have to sleep on it. I'll make a decision, and it's not a rocket.
Well, I'm asking you to make a decision right now.
Well,
a decision, like you said.
That's why I'm asking you to rehash that trade. Regurgitate
back. Oh, you want to know. Okay. The trade is this. David Price, Tim Hudson, Matt Kemp. For Verlander, Lance Lynn, and Adam Jones. Think about that while I play the soundbite from Adam Jones.
Mm-hmm.
This is Adam Jones, ladies and gentlemen, talking about the success of the Baltimore Orioles and how it's no coincidence that they're in the lead this early in the season and going into the midpoint. He gives thanks to Buck Showalter. If it'll play.
The accountability factor. If you've seen it, we've had guys sent up and sent down. I know, you know, we've had a lot of injuries, but it's accountability. You come here, we got a job. Just be prepared for your job. You come out here and do the best. Don't make excuses. And if you're not doing your job, hey, just find somebody else.
And that's all I'm trying to do. I'm trying to find somebody else. Because people on my team ain't doing their job. So, JT, ATM money, do we have a deal? Since you said, unlike me, you'll go ahead and make a decision. So, let's put that to action right now.
So, you're telling me, hey, you put me in a spot, but that's okay. I don't mind being in a spot. Because I'm in a nice position here. You want Justin Verlander, Lance Lynn, and Adam Jones. You're going to give me Matt Kemp,
mm-hmm.
Tim Hudson, and David
mm-hmm.
Price.
Yes.
Tim Hudson is what? A number two or a number one?
Number one.
And David Price is a number two.
Correct. Lance Lynn's a number six.
Oh.
I mean, number five. So don't I don't care about since you want to go that route.
No. I'm Lance Lynn. Justin Verlander and Adam Jones for Matt Kemp, Tim Hudson, and David Price.
I mean, like you said, you're ready to go. Just say yes. Be like
yes.
Dorothy. All I gotta do is say yes.
I said yes.
Send it, and we'll make it happen.
We'll see what happens if it gets approved or not.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
last time they vetoed our trade.
Yes, exactly. So. We'll see. As soon as I get home, and I should be home in the next 20 minutes or so, when I get on my computer, I'll call in and I'll send it as I talk to you.
All right. Well, that's fine. We can make that deal. I hate to see your bats get better, but, you know, I'm desperate. It's the midway point. Almost the midway point. And I love my boy Kemp, but it's time for a change. All right, speaking of time for a change, let's talk about, and I asked the question to the audience, and I'm going to ask you. We're talking about the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. Does
right.
anyone want to see the Heat or the Celtics represent the East in the NBA Finals? I know everybody wants to see LeBron James lose, da-da-da-da-da. But really, does anybody want – are they going to watch the NBA Finals if either the Celtics or the Heat go. So I'm going to bring that up to you, Jerry, but let's talk about or listen to the Heat's coach and then Paul Pierce about this game that was a 10-point victory for the Celtics where LeBron James missed 10 free throws and Dwayne Wade got none. So once I get this to stop moving, I can hit the sound bite. This is driving me crazy, JT.
Yep, I know. I've been there, my man. You got a continuous wheel, and nothing's happening.
We understand that we'll have to play well to play in this building. All of our energies, all of our focus right now will be on Sunday. We still have a golden opportunity, and we know that once we settle in and gather ourselves and get ready for tomorrow for Sunday.
Now, that was after the loss to the Celtics. And here's Paul Pierce talking about how the Heat lost to the Celtics. And does this call for the need for Chris Bosh? You're killing me, Smalls.
Yep.
I thought we rolled KG a lot instead of we popped him a lot in games one and game two. And when we rolled him, we noticed that they brought a smaller guy on him, and we just throw it up and told him to be aggressive. You know, if they're going to rotate, play with a small lineup, Kevin, you know, when you catch it, just be aggressive. And I thought he did that for the most part. They're going to hack him. They're going to bang him, try to push him. But, you know, I like what he brought tonight from the middle. He got fouled a lot, and he was a great presence for us on the inside.
There you go. So, again, does this call for the need of a big man presence, either in Chris Bosh or somebody down low? Do you think that'll be the formula that the Celtics will now use, along with Rondo running up and down the court, heading to the bucket, to tie the series at 2-2?
Obviously, that it seems like that the Heat need a big man that can compete with Kevin Garnett to keep him busy on the defensive side of the court and to give him problems on the offensive side of the court. They don't have that, and Boston's made that adjustment in game three, or game three and four, and we got a series now. And to your other point, does anybody want to see Miami or Boston in the finals? Well, you got no choice. Those are only two teams left in the East. One of them, more than other, it wants to be seen quite naturally. Miami Heat. The people want to see the Miami Heat, seeing a quest for a championship. See if LeBron's going to get over the hump, and all the hype behind this shortened season about this being the Heat year, they're focused. They got a chip on their shoulder. Boston's not going to go down without a fight. They got the wily veterans on that team, including a very good, probably the best point guard, arguably in the playoffs, less than the playoffs, which is Rondo. So it's going to be tooth and nail. I think it's going to be a home and home series. Same thing, I think, with the other side. But we're talking about the Heat now.
Okay. So again, the formula to beat them, is it, give it down to Garnett every time now that they don't have that big man, they don't have Bosh, they don't have that one person to reign supreme? Is that the game plan?
When the opportunity arises, when they can take advantage of that, whatever possession it is, when they can take advantage of that, they will. Because the fact is they don't have anybody to compete with Kevin Garnett on either side of the court, either defensive or offensive side. So, yes, they're going to take advantage of that as much as they can. They kick it down low. They get collapsed on Garnett because whoever guards them is going to need help. And then he can kick it out to guys to shoot jumpers, two or three-pointers, whatever. So, guys can knock down shots from the outside. Kevin Garnett can facilitate those guys when they need it. So we got a series now. So we got to see if Oklahoma is going to rise up again and do the same thing that Boston did to Miami. Who didn't think that this was going to happen? I thought this was going to happen. These are two evenly matched teams, and they're more evenly matched now because of Chris Bosh not being there. So who would have thought Chris Bosh would have been a bigger factor than he was? Now you realize how important Chris Bosh is. I still don't like him as a player, but in the scheme of what Miami runs, it's very important that Miami has Chris Bosh to be the third wheel in that on that team, along with Wade and James. And if he comes back and he comes back healthy before the series is over, Boston may be in trouble. If not, I think Miami may be in trouble. So.
Okay. Well, I know last night on No Chaser with you and Mac, you had David Aldridge, the NBA analyst for TNT. What did he talk about as far as the playoffs and the matchup between the Heat and the Celtics?
Well, he talked about that the Celtics, before last night's game, he said the Celtics had serious problems trying to contend with Wade and LeBron because they've found a way to coexist without Chris Bosh, and there's no one that can contend with Wade. Contend with LeBron at all. So whatever LeBron wants to do, the only way he gets held back is he holds himself back. So I think if I'm not mistaken, and he thinks the Heat are going to progress to the finals along with another team quite naturally in the West that I think we may be talking about it soon.
Yeah.
But I don't want to jump over to the West yet. So
okay, we're about to. But for those of you that missed the show last night, and you had a good audience last night, 18 callers from what I saw,
right.
David Aldridge of TNT, also ESPN at one point, was on the air with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor on No Chaser, which is a program we air every Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And check it out in the archives. It was last night's show. Next week he's got Pat the Rock, and then the week after that he has the Professor, a.k.a. Grayson Dalcher. So Dalcher, I believe that's how you say it. So No Chaser is heating up, and we got people doing many, many things. And since you talked about the West, let's go to the West finals between the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder. You really have the old versus the new in this game. I was reading and I heard, I can't remember what broadcast it was, where Kevin Durant and Westbrook were 8 years old or 8 and 7 or something like that when Tim Duncan was drafted in the NBA. And now Timmy is the elder statesman, and the Spurs lost their first game in 20-some-odd games heading into the playoffs, so they haven't lost a lot. Well, they haven't lost but one time in the last 30 or something like that games. So the Thunder lays the boom on them, beating them by 20 points at home. And Popovich, you know, he's like, okay, well, I'm not seeing the energy. I don't see the power. But, you know, what do you expect? You're not going to win every game, but this is the playoffs, da-da-da-da-da. Well, here's Kevin Durant on going into Game 3 and how they were not playing scared or panicking. Uh-oh. Come on,
hey, Vic,
man. I'm here, dude. Yeah.
I got to call you back. I got to do something real quick.
I wouldn't say desperate. We just played more of a sense of urgency. We knew what was at stake, you know, but we weren't desperate or anything like that. And, you know, Fish has been through so many of these games, so, you know, he's better off listening to him than listening to me.
Well, Kevin Durant, you know, said they knew it was at stake. They weren't going to panic. They were going to play their game. And, you know, they did. They got the home crowd. The Thunder, you know, they don't lose very much at home. I believe they were 6-1 in the playoffs at home. I believe that was their record at home. And it's very difficult to count the Spurs out, or the Thunder out, I should say, because they have an exciting young core of players. Now, I think Mr. Brooks, the coach of the Thunder, made a very good decision by taking Westbrook off of Tony Parker and putting the other kid on him, because Westbrook was just getting his butt whooped. I mean, it's no nice way of saying it. He was getting taken to school. And I was hoping that Jerry didn't get off the phone when he did, because I wanted to bring up the issue of, you know, a lot of people were saying that Kevin Durant needed to get up in Westbrook's face and tell him, look, get a ball to me. Stop trying to be, you know, the man, the savior. Let's work as a team. So before Kevin Durant could do that, Brooks, the head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, came in and took control. He made the decision. Now, Westbrook is a scorer, but his position is point guard. He's Allen Iverson. I mean, he can create for others as well as for himself, but Allen never had that mega star on his team like Westbrook does in Kevin Durant. You can't just take one guy and shred the Spurs. They are a veteran team. They are a disciplined team. They know how to win. They know how to play defense. They know how to play half-court offense or running good. You just can't. So Brooks decides, well, you know what, Westbrook, okay, I know what I'm going to do. You're single-handedly killing it for us, so let me switch it up. You can't guard Tony Parker. You just can't. And then I think his name is Shumpert. No, it's not Shumpert. It's I can't remember the kid's name. I know he's I believe he's Swedish by nature because he played for the Swiss team in the summer games or something like that. But this kid not only holds Tony Parker down and locks him down defensively, he also goes for 19 points. And I believe, like, what, 8-9 rebounds? So this kid is coming out, D'ing up Tony Parker, who's arguably one of the best point guards in NBA. I want to say history, but I can think of some that are better than him. So I would say current NBA lore. And he proved that not only could he play on this level off the bench, but he can guard Tony Parker and score. And let Westbrook and Durant and all the other role players play the game. Instead of worrying about, you know, Westbrook being a liability. I mean, if you think about it now, just think about it. Brooks made a very smart move. He saw that momentum was shifting straight toward the Spurs, even though they were home games for the Spurs. Gotcha. Understand the home cooking. But he also noticed that Westbrook was killing them on the defensive end.
and he was not sharing the ball. He was throwing junk up and expecting to get a call, and he wasn't getting it. So, JT, talk to me about your feelings, and I know you have strong feelings about Westbrook, but the move that Brooks made to pull Westbrook off of Parker and consequently the Thunder getting a 20-point victory at home.
Well, I think he kind of took the pressure off, or kind of like the mental pressure Westbrook off, and let him be a little bit more freer without having to guard Tony Parker. You can see that the whole mindset, his whole attitude changed, and he was an offensive and especially a defensive force once Scotty Brooks did that. I've turned my negative sentiment toward Mr. Westbrook. That's what I'll call him now, Mr. Westbrook, because he has changed his game from what it was last year when I was highly critical of him. He fits what they want him to do as a point guard. I know he's the point guard, but I'm old school, and Mac and I have talked about this before. Or I think it was on, maybe it was on the FSP Crew show on Thursday when we had Phil Handy, that he's not, doesn't fit into the old mold of a point guard, a dish and set up the team type of guy. He besides doing some of that, he's also relied upon to be the scorer. And he has toned his game down from what it was last year to accommodate what Scotty Brooks wants him to do as a point guard. And he has done it very well, quite naturally, getting him back or getting him to the Western Conference Finals. So the energy and the force they came out with on the last game, they have to sustain that same type of force, because you expect San Antonio as an experienced team to rebound from a poor showing that they had in the last game, especially getting beat down like they did. That veteran team is going to come out with a purpose, with a huge chip on their shoulder. You know, Popovich is definitely going to have that team ready to play, and Oklahoma better be ready to play to keep their home court advantage, per se. So we'll see what happens.
Go ahead,
I'm sorry.
No. I was cutting you off. But so you feel as though that this, just like in the Boston Celtic Heat series, it's a home and home thing.
I really believe that. You have to, you know, I looked at how both these teams played on the road, and both these teams played at home, and the first game, the first two games that Boston played, they were totally, they were a lot more confident and a lot more aggressive being at home. The same has to be with the Oklahoma and with San Antonio. San Antonio was very forceful, very aggressive, and like you know, like everybody knows that watched the NBA, they get the call. The refs give the home team the calls. I don't know how, why that is, but they get the calls. Someone told me a while ago, and you still keep it in mind, the role players, the teams that come off the bench, the role players, because they're on the road, a lot of them don't perform as well, but when they go home, they play a lot better because it's home. That has a lot to do with how a team plays too. So, and I think it's a home at home. Well, quite naturally, one of these teams is going to have to break that just once. I think they have to break it just once to be able to win the series. Either Miami or Boston or San Antonio or Oklahoma have to win one game on the other team's court, because I think each one of them is going to hold home court advantage. So, I don't know who it's going to be, but it's obvious somebody has to do that.
Well, I honestly think that the Thunder maybe, just maybe, have an uphill battle. Now, I know we both picked them to come out of the West this year, and we both said that whatever team wins the West is going to win the NBA title. Are you going to back off on that at all, or do you think that whether it's the Spurs or the Thunder, they're still going to win that title?
Well, let me put it this way. I second-guessed myself when I saw the San Antonio beat Oklahoma 2 games straight. But I didn't second-guess myself when I've seen what the Oklahoma did at home to the San Antonio Spurs. That just reinforces what I think is going to happen. They soundly whipped the San Antonio Spurs at home. That didn't happen in San Diego when Oklahoma was visiting San Antonio. When Oklahoma was visiting San Antonio, San Antonio had to fight both games basically to win those games. Oklahoma won their game in Oklahoma very convincingly. So I'm not backing off. Each one of these games is more experience for that young Oklahoma team. They're like sponges. They're gathering all this in, and they have the skill set, even though San Antonio has a hell of a team, to go against the big three. I still like Oklahoma. I really do.
Okay. All right. I hope Oklahoma plays the Heat, because I want to see a young gun final. I really don't want to see the Celtics versus the Spurs, even though it would be a classic matchup. I just don't think the ratings would be that good. I know Boston, you know, you got the whole New England area and all that. San Antonio is a small market, and nobody really recognizes anybody from the Spurs other than Ginobili, Parker, and Duncan. At least most people can recognize, you know, most of the Celtics.
Right.
You know, you've got Wade and James. Everybody else, oh, they're just there to get a ring. You know, it is what it is. I don't
right.
get it, but we'll see what happens. We got a caller from the 301 that I want to bring in here. And see what they have to say. I believe they want to talk about this subject matter. Welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics. Please state your name.
I'm the delinquent cousin of the host. $20
yes,
delinquent of the host.
Man,
that's who I is.
That's like 20%
yeah.
interest. So you it's more than $20. But what's going
$20, on? $20 ain't no 20% interest. Good luck on trying to collect that 20% big chump.
I'm
what's
just
happening, to beautiful
$20.
People? Whatever. 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 I was the one that told you I owed you the $20.
Well, I didn't want to bring it up. You know, money can hurt families. I ain't trying to hurt my family.
Oh, you going to hurt me? Oh, see, I'm going to come out to Germany and hurt you, Slim. What's happening, y'all?
Nothing. Hey, look, we going to Six Flags on the 30th. You never gave a response whether or not you were going to show up or not.
June 30th?
Yes. You never gave a response.
We might be out there.
You know.
I mean, just call me. I live right up the street. We can walk up there.
All right.
We can walk up
but
there
now,
to Ghetto Redskin Lane. We can walk up there.
Anyway.
No, I'm serious, man. That joint, it ain't what it used to be. But, no. But, I was kind of feeling my man, Jerry. You know, I like the Thunder. I mean, nothing taken away from the Spurs. I like Timmy. You know what I mean? He looked like he want another ring. He looked healthy. He putting in the good work. But the Thunder, I almost gave up. I ain't going to lie, Jerry. I almost gave up on him. But
right.
that win, you put it perfectly. You know, they whooped them soundly on their floor. You know, and it was a fight back in San Antonio. You know, they had to fight them from coming back from runs. And also, I do agree with you, Whitney, you said that, you know, these young cats, those young guys are like sponges. Yes, they are. Every time they learn something, they, you know, they apply it, and they have the talent and the youth. They going, it's going to be a very interesting series. I think that they will tie it up, and we be at 2-2, and we gonna go floor to floor. Then it's gonna, but it's gonna be up to Oklahoma for them if they if they're gonna take it. They're gonna have to take it in San Antonio. They gonna have to take it.
They have to win one game in San Antonio. Isn't it like a 2-3-2 format? If I'm not mistaken, or is it 2-2-1-1-1? I'm not sure, but
If it's 2-2-1-1, I think they have a better chance at it. But I don't know if it's a 2-3-2. If it's a 2-3-2, it's going to be a little bit rough on.
Okay. Well, I mean, in any event, they were going to have to win a game in San Antonio in order to advance to the championship, because San Antonio is the higher seed. So they're going to have to take one there, figure it out one way or the other. You know, I'm not I hope Oklahoma does it. I really think they have the talent to do it. But they're actually going up against the best team in the NBA right now in the San Antonio Spurs, because they're complete. They have a deep bench, a veteran bench. They can play all styles of basketball. And they got a great coach who's been there and done that. So, you know, if they can get past San Antonio, they can definitely get past Miami.
I don't know. I do not know. It depends on Shebron.
Okay.
It depends on her.
All right. Well, look, he and Wade said, you know, they are a driving tag team, meaning they don't shoot a lot of jumpers. They go to the hole and score that way. So I got a feeling that their approach to this next game against the Celtics is going to drive, draw a foul, go to the free throw line, and get an and one, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I feel that their strategy is going to be, because, you know, like Jerry and I were talking about earlier, all they got to do is give it to Garnett down in the low post or underneath the bucket, and they're not going to stop him. So,
see
what happens.
See, that's the thing that upsets me about Shebron, man. If she post up, you know, he would automatically have about 40 points. I don't understand why she don't post up. Post up, Shebron.
Can we refer to him as LeBron, please? Oh my God.
No, because it makes no sense to me. You know what I mean? You 6'8". 260-some-odd pounds, a physical specimen of nature we haven't seen in a god-awful long time, and you won't post up. Every time you do post up, something good happens. But you want to come down and you know, and dish and passes, which is all good, but we need you down low, Slim. They need him down low.
I got you. I think we lost Jerry, and I'm getting an 848 number, so I'm going to bring this 848 number. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Politics. Please state your name.
Yeah, I just hung up from my cell, and now I'm on my landline. That's all.
Okay, there we go. All right. Well, I mean, Mike, I agree with you. If they post him up, him and Paul Pierce, that would be a very good matchup for the Heat, if that's what they were going to do. But he would have to drive. He would have to dribble drive, penetrate on Paul, because if he tries to stay out there, post up and do a turnaround jumper or something, I think he's less likely to make it. But, you know, that's not in the coach's repertoire, teaching the low post or the high post game, because they don't run that. But we'll see what happens. We've got a couple good series going on, and I hope everything works out for the best. Again, I don't think it's going to be very good NBA ratings this year unless Oklahoma is in the championship. That's just my opinion on it. Let's move on to what everybody really wants to talk about, and that's football. So
OTAs are going on, and I posted several articles about the arm, referring to RG3.
The arm, that's right, the arm.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And I applaud Andrew Luck for standing in California to get his degree. I applaud him. RG3 already graduated. He has his stuff, but he hasn't signed his contract. And he's not going to sign his contract until Andrew Luck signs his. And Andrew Luck's not going to sign his until after he graduates. Got it. Not a problem. But one comment I want to talk about, and I don't know if you guys heard this or not, but RG3 said he grew up a Broncos fan, and all the stuff that he's heard from former quarterbacks of Mike Shanahan, none of it's true. So that leads me to believe that, okay, you had Rich Gannon, Brian Greasy, Jake Plummer, Cutler, and who else coached? I mean, Mike Shanahan coached back in the day when he was with the Raiders. And
you got Steve Young, John Elway.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Thanks. So out of those guys, what is it that RG3 is saying that isn't true about Mike Shanahan?
He's talking to Donovan. Talking to Donovan. That was a shot at Donovan. That was
really?
a direct hit.
Did Donovan reply back to it or something?
For what? Donovan need to be out there in Arizona exercising and trying to do something to get his career together. He done.
He dropped about 10-15 pounds. He looks like the slimmer Donovan McNabb that came into the league. So I don't know. But I didn't know that he was directing that at Donovan McNabb. I did not
mm-hmm.
know that.
Yeah, that was a shot at him for what he was saying about, you know, RG3 not being a fit and Shanahan won't curtail the offense towards him and this and this and that and about his Shanahan's ego and stuff like that. Oh, yeah. That's what
okay.
that was about.
Okay.
That,
so what do you think
about
that, Jerry?
Well, you know what? You know, I'm almost feeling like I need to put a condom on or whatever. Well, you guys need to put a condom on because you just fall in love with RG3. And before you lose control of yourself, you need to put something on because
oh my god,
because the love is just spewing out all over.
I don't care, Slim. I'm just happy. We have a bona fide talent at the quarterback position. I understand he's got a lot to learn. I'm not saying we doing Super Bowl, anything crazy. I'm just happy we on course. You know what I'm saying? We have a legitimate quarterback. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I can agree with that.
Go ahead. Because, you know, after all these years of, you know, Shulas, Farrats, Werfels, Freezes, all that. I'm sick of all of that. Sick of all of it. Just tired of it. You know, just sick of it. Tired.
Okay.
That grinds his gears.
Since
we're talking about bona fide quarterbacks, let's talk about one that isn't.
Here we go. Go ahead.
He plays for Jerry's old team.
I knew where you were going with this.
Here he is talking about OTAs in Jetville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We're out there every day working extremely hard, trying to push each other, try to have fun. You know, Greg's been doing a great job. Matt and GJ have been working hard, so we've been enjoying it.
Now, the one thing I want to say is this. The almighty Darrell Revis, and I am not on Darrell Revis' side in his possible holdout situation. But the almighty Darrell Revis was the latest to sing the praises of Tebow. Oh. But Tebow didn't have such a great practice the last couple weeks, if I'm not mistaken, or the last couple OTAs.
Right.
But, I mean, how much fun can he have? He's not going against anything live. He's not under pressure. So, and he's still throwing the ball in the dirt, Jerry. I mean, talk to me.
Hey, It is what it is. You know how I feel about Tim Tebow. It's been I'm highly critical to Tim Tebow. Besides that and other things that have gone on with the Jet organization over the years, including this off season, I've decided to jump teams after 44 years of being a fan. So it is what it is. What I do want to touch on that you touched on briefly, but you didn't go as where I thought you were going, is Darrelle Revis didn't give a full commitment that he would be in training camp.
I was going to get to that, but go ahead.
When asked the question, was he going to hold out or something to that effect, was he going to be in training camp or OTAs, his answer was, why do I have to answer that? Which, you know, normally you would just say, yes, I'm going to be in there, versus mm-hmm. why do I have to answer that? So that leads to speculation that he's planning on holding out to get an increase in his present contract, which he signed, which he still has, if I'm not mistaken, 2 years left on.
Yes.
And you know what? Like I said, it's a snowball effect. And I'm sure glad I jumped off the train before it ran off the rail, was derailed, because this is just one joke after another, and I don't want to be part of it.
Well, before I let Michael get into it, I'm going to break down the particulars of the contract. I believe it was a four-year deal or extension that he got done a couple years ago that pays him $64 million. And he's already been paid, he's owed another $13 million over the next 2 years. And, again, he just restructured it 2 years ago. And he held out and came back, had hamstring issues, and was in and out of the lineup. And, again, he was not that devastating this past season, in my opinion. He didn't do anything, in my opinion, to garner another restructuring of his contract. I'm in agreement with players getting paid. And I want to talk about Forte and all these other guys, and OC just got paid too. But I'm not in agreement with a player that just got his contract restructured, got paid a lot of money up front, now wants to get it restructured again so he can get more money. I think he owes it to the Jets to let the Jets get that next year out of him. If they're going to trade him or do whatever, do it. He's a millionaire. He's a millionaire, and he's excellent at what he does. But at the same time, I think he just needs to let it go, let other people on the team get paid, and, you know, play out, you know, the next year of his contract, and then see what happens. That's my thoughts. What do you think, Mike?
I don't think he's going to sit out. I think he'll be in there. I mean, the CBA that they signed is some garbage, and it highly favors the NFL. After he sits around and pouts a little bit, he'll be in there.
Okay. Well, I hope he's in there. I don't think he will be, because he seems to me he's coming off as a very greedy person. In my opinion, the Jets are on the decline. In my opinion, anytime you bring Tebow in to give competition, or quote unquote to do the wildcat, that tells me you don't have full confidence in your current starting quarterback to run all 45 to 60 plays per game to win it. So I think that Rex Ryan is actually on the hot seat. I'm just going to throw it out there. I think he's on the hot seat this year, even though in his first 3 years he went to the AFC Championship two of those 3 or 4 years, just my opinion, because the Jets are putting a lot of money into this team and not getting a lot of results other than headaches. Just my thought process. I'm also going to talk about one more topic, but let me get to this other OTA, and we're talking about New England. Here's Tom Brady on OTAs up in Boston.
If everyone's not on the same page, it doesn't work. So, you know, a lot of what these practices are about is everybody getting on the same page. You got a lot of new guys from other teams, from rookies, and you know, the faster we can get up to speed and work together as a unit, the better team we're going to be.
So, you know,
Brady, he actually also gave his support for Wes Welker to get an extended deal because he's been a valuable part. But I believe Wes is like 31, 32, and in any other system, he's not that valuable. He signed his tender offer, which is a one-year, $7 million deal. But JT, do the Patriots pay this guy to stick around for another 3 or 4 years?
Wes Welker is Tom Brady's security blanket. Tom Brady goes to him. He's very comfortable going to him at all times, just like Peyton Manning. Just like Marvin Harrison was to Peyton Manning. And then after Marvin Harrison left, just like basically, in my opinion, Dallas Clark was to Peyton Manning, not more Dallas Clark than Reggie Wayne. So these top-flight quarterbacks have a security blanket that they like throwing to, that they're very comfortable with, they have a rapport with. As long as Wes Welker fits into the Patriot way and doesn't stray off like he briefly tried to, he'll stay there.
What do you mean he briefly tried to?
Well, because he spoke about his contract and said that the Patriots were,
not being fair with him.
Yeah, not being fair with him, and they lowered their offer, which wasn't the case. And I think he got spoken to behind closed doors, and he retracted what he had said. Because you don't talk about your contract if you're a New England Patriot to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, more or less, you're frowned upon, and you can be put on the it list, if you know what I'm talking about. So, so
damn crooks.
Yeah.
Hey,
so,
some crooks.
Instead of saying they're cheap, the way to say it is that they're frugal. The Patriots are a very frugal organization.
No,
but
you're being
opinion,
nice.
They're
being
cheap.
Nice. They're crooks. They're crooks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, check it out. We've got 7 minutes left live there. We're going to end up going to overtime, maybe not too long, maybe 10, 15 minutes. But because in the overtime, I want to talk about the free agents that are out there, or the restricted free agents that are out there that might or should be signed next. But right now, I want to bring up something real quick. I want to know what you guys think about P. Diddy's son getting the scholarship to UCLA. And there's a lot of controversy. Some people say, what does it matter that his father makes X amount of dollars? Some people say, well, since he does, you know, maybe he should just give it back and let his father pay for it, or he deserves it. I personally think that P. Diddy's son, if he earned the scholarship, he's the 53rd best player in the United States, that he deserves the scholarship, then take it and go to the school and get the education and play for him. Some people say no, because his dad makes a bunch of money, he should pay for it and give that scholarship to somebody else that's less fortunate and might, you know, have a bigger impact on the team. What do you say, Jerry?
Well, we brought this up yesterday. In fact, that was the first subject I brought up on the No Chaser show on Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with me and Mac Williams. Anyway,
I love it.
I felt the same exact way that you did. This kid worked his butt off in high school. And did this on his own. His daddy didn't help him do this. He did this on his own, besides having a 3.7 grade point average. So it wasn't like the kid was looking for a handout. This kid earned it, just like you said. He was the 53rd best player in the nation. There's a lot of millionaire sports figures that have kids that excel in sports that get scholarships. Why criticize P. Diddy's kid? Because he's P. Diddy? Because he's earned, he's worth over a half a billion dollars? That had, I understand. I can understand on the other side. But this kid earned this. This kid did this on his own. And he's going to have to prove it on the field. And this is a scholarship. It doesn't take away from the general scholarship of the school. This is an athletic scholarship, which is funded by the, if I'm not mistaken, by the athletic organization of the school. So it doesn't take away from some kid who's looking for a scholarship that doesn't have the means that P. Diddy has. To get his kid to school. This is just an athletic scholarship. So this kid earned it. He deserves it regardless of what his parents make. He earns it. Go to school, kid. Do your thing in and out of the classroom.
All right. Mike, what you got?
This is a non-issue. This is a real big non-issue. You know, they picked him. He got the scholarship. Go. Let him go. I mean, this is a non-issue. People need to mind their business.
Well, that's part of it. You know, it's a lot of people, the haves and the have-nots. That's what the issue is, not the fact that it's just, you know, P. Diddy or his son or
right. It's the people. It's a lot of people that look at Puffy as someone, and Puffy and his family as someone who has, and you know. That's just ridiculous, man. It's just it's a real non-issue. I mean, the kid earned it. The kid got it. You know what I mean? Even if, you know, the school chose him, they chose to give it to him. You know what I mean? And, you know, I don't even want to get into the NCAA, you know, because I think they're crooks too. You know what I mean?
Well,
but
I also look at it this way, and I'm going to jump to back to the pros, but I look at it as, okay, well, UCLA says they need to bring some type of light to their program. Yes, this brings light to their program, but it also brings another booster to their program. Now, P. Diddy probably has, and I know he has, several foundations that send kids to school, and it comes out of his own pocket.
But none of that stuff matters.
Everybody sees... People see P. Diddy has the money. He should be able to take care of his own kids and to college, da da da, and let the other kids that don't have the money get the scholarship. I got it. I don't agree with it. I was saying I don't agree with it, but I think that an individual, if they work hard enough, and I don't care whether you're white, black, Indian, Asian, whatever, you know, I believe you deserve it. If you work hard enough and somebody feels sees fit to give you a scholarship, then you deserve it, and you take full advantage of it. Does that mean that P. Diddy has to bend over and be like, okay, hey, nah, I'm not going to let my son take it? Or does that mean that this kid has to turn it down just because of the pressure? No. I think it means more, or it speaks volumes, if the kid takes a scholarship, plays very well, has a good GPA average, and ends up going to the pros. What are they going to say then? That, okay, he's the son of a billionaire. What does he need millions for? I mean, it could turn into one of those types of stories.
Yeah, but see, that's the whole thing. My whole thing is, why are we looking at – why is everybody looking at Puffy and what he makes?
Exactly.
Why aren't y'all looking at the real people that are funding the scholarship, really? Why aren't y'all questioning that? They picked them. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Going to be their money. You know what
right.
I mean? So why are we having this discussion about what Puffy makes and what he don't make? That's the thing that kills me, man. And they keep getting away with this stuff, and they keep getting away with it in the court of public opinion. You know, people just automatically, you know, go into, like you said, what Puffy makes and what and his foundations and what he's doing and stuff. None of that stuff ain't gonna matter. They still gonna have stuff to say. If this kid come out there, you know, with a 4.0 average, you know what I'm saying? What is his position? Linebacker or something?
No. He's a defensive cornerback.
He come out, have 1,000 interceptions in 1 year and whatnot, and just like all American and stuff. They still gonna have stuff to say about it,
right?
You know what I mean? But
preach it.
Yet and still, the real criminals keep getting away with the same nonsense they keep getting away with. And as long as the conversation is on, you know what I mean, what, you know, what Puffy and what this young man's family, where his stock has come from, then we're always going to have a problem.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to go off and stick around for the archive part. So we're about to get into that right about now.
Trades in place.
All right, we're going to make it happen. Now, speaking of trades, let's jump into these notable restricted free agents that haven't signed their 10 years, the tender contracts, or just haven't heard much from them. We got Dwayne Bowe. We've got and we never heard much about Dwayne Bowe because I guess it's Kansas City. We've got Matt Forte. We've got Ray Rice. O.C. Manure just signed his contract. We got Drew Brees. We've got Wes Welker. And it was one more that I wanted to talk about.
Mike Wallace?
Yeah, Mike Wallace. Thank you very much. Mike Wallace. Now, out of those players that haven't signed, who deserves to be the first one signed? Now, you got a couple big ones there. But out of all those six names, who deserves to be taken care of first, Mike?
Drew Brees.
Okay, why?
Because he's the face of that franchise, and right now, the Saints is a falling ship. And they need to stick some kind of anchor in the ground, and when their face of their franchise is, you know, wavering like that out there in the wind, they need to get him. He's shown that, you know, he's going to do what he needs to do. He's proven, and it's the quarterback-driven league. Him.
Okay. All right, Jerry.
I couldn't have said it much better than that. I mean, he's the face of the franchise. They need something positive to happen. He makes that team go. He's the heart of that franchise. Who's the preseason? Pre-game hype master of that team before they get into a game. Drew Brees. No Drew Brees. No Saints. Let me put it that way. You'll have a revolution in New Orleans if Drew Brees does not get signed and is treated fairly. I can't believe the Saints are playing hardball like this and stringing this out. They should give Drew Brees anything he asks because he is truly a franchise quarterback and comparable to what the other named quarterbacks, meaning Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, has been doing. He's won a championship. He's shown loyalty to that team beyond dispute. In that city, beyond dispute. When the city was in dire straits, Drew Brees came there and has been a loyal person to New Orleans and the two New Orleans Saints. And to be treated like this is a travesty, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you on that.
I second that.
For me, I have a three-way tie. And I'm going to explain. Drew Brees, Ray Rice, and Matt Forte. But first I'm going to talk about Dwayne Bowe and Mike Wallace. Wes Welker, he should get his money, but I don't think he should be one of the first to get it. But Mike Wallace, here's a problem with signing Mike Wallace right now. Next year, Emmanuel Sanders and Antonio Brown become free agents as well. So you pay Wallace now a lot of money, you're going to lose one of those two next year.
Okay.
And
your point?
The point is that those three guys, you need to have all three. So if Wallace gets paid now, Antonio Brown, he's young, raw, but as we all saw last year, he became Ben Roethlisberger's favorite target. Okay? Sanders is...
Can I interrupt you just for a minute? Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders, if I'm not mistaken, came in the league at the same time, even though Antonio Brown... In fact, they even talked up Emmanuel Sanders over Antonio Brown, but in reality, Antonio Brown has outplayed and been more healthy than than Emmanuel Sanders. So I don't think what you're saying holds water, because I think the one receiver that they can lose will be Emmanuel Sanders. So they really have to worry about paying Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown, which it makes sense to me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But it does hold water, just to let you know. Anyway, your boy Ben likes Antonio Brown, and he goes to him a lot. Wallace is a deep threat. We got that.
Mm-hmm.
But they need that threesome. They need that threesome because the running game is not going to be that good this year. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Mendenhall's coming off of a ACL injury, and he plans to be back before the season begins. Not going to happen. Maybe towards the end of the season, so you can scratch him. And the backup,
Isaac Redman.
Redman is not going to be the answer.
That's why I'm the master.
You're a master baiter. Is that what you're saying?
That's why I'm the master.
Okay.
Because I got those names right off the top of my head. And Antonio Brown, I'm jumping in here real quick. Antonio Brown, I clued you guys in preseason last year.
Oh, God.
Go ahead.
All right. So that's why I wouldn't give Mike Wallace the money first. Dwayne Bowe is too inconsistent, even though he is their go-to guy now in Kansas City. But Jamaal Charles is returning. You got Peyton Hillis. They still have Thomas Jones, so they got a three-headed monster at running back. And if Jonathan Baldwin can emerge and get his head out of his arse, he could be a very big threat at wide receiver. Antonio Moyaki is coming back off of an injury. So Dwayne Bowe, until he becomes more consistent, I don't think he should be getting paid right away to begin with anyway. Now, to my other guys, why say Ray Rice should be paid? You take Ray Rice out of that backfield. Yeah, you've got Wilson McGahee's gone. I don't even remember who their backup running back is right now.
Exactly.
So you take Ray Rice out of the equation. Joe Flacco has to win the division on his own with Anquan and Smith and a young tight end core. And he won't do it. Ray Rice is, 67% of their offense, running the ball and catching the ball. He needs to be paid. You only get paid really once as a running back because the lifespan is so short. You need to give that man his money, call it a day. Now, Matt Forte did the good soldier thing. He didn't hold out. He shut up about his contract. He had a great year until he got injured. But the injury is what's going to be what holds him from getting paid all the money he wants. That's why they went out and got Michael Bush. But this goes to show a lot of players, especially a lot of young NFL players coming in, that, look, this is a business. You can take all the criticism in the world about, you know, trying to get paid. But once you get paid and you perform, there's nothing that anybody can say. But if you shut up about it and you still perform and outperform your contract and they still don't pay you, then it's like, okay, well, he's got a bad knee. Not too many teams are going to pick him up and give him the type of money that he wants. So now he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. The Bears need to pay that guy. They can put Michael Bush in there. They'll have a good back, but he won't do the stuff that Forte does.
Matt Forte was the equivalent of Ray Rice in that offense.
Exactly.
So to not pay Matt Forte,
after he already said, you know what, I'm gonna shut up about my contract,
mm-hmm.
and I'm gonna play out the year and see what happens then.
Right.
But he got
injured. And the thing about it. And these teams talk about loyalty and whatever. And as soon as the player wants to get paid, and rightfully so, these guys should get paid. These teams are stonewalling, are being cheap. And Chicago is known for being cheap just like the New England Patriots are known for being cheap to players and preach loyalty, Matt Forte is getting screwed royally.
Yeah, he is.
Ray Rice is getting screwed royally.
Yeah.
Drew Brees is getting screwed royally.
Well, I was going to talk about Drew Brees in a second because I think it's a little different down there. I have a different perspective than you guys.
It's a whole lot different down there.
Yeah.
You know, what? I mean, because I think, the, you know, those other two guys, Forte and Ray Rice, I believe that, you know, they should get their, they need to get their contracts. But they're up against, you know, they're up against what the NFL's thinking. You know, running backs are a dime a dozen. I mean,
right.
you need to find that guy. You know, it's hard to find that guy, but you can always plug another dude in. You can always grab one fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, and have him run 100 yards in a game. You know what I mean? That's what they up against. I mean, I'm sorry, I feel them. You know what I mean? But that's the thinking now.
It is the thinking, and that's more evident. I mean, it's no more evident than in Tampa Bay. I mean, you understand the Blunt is a smash mouth back who's not going to catch a lot,
right,
and whose pass protection isn't that great. But if you give him the ball, put him on a straight line, he's going to make things happen. But they went out and got Doug Baldwin. They got the kid out of Boise State to come in and give him that second set of hands, but is built like Ray Rice and Matt Forte and can play like Ray Rice and Matt Forte. So the question is, do you draft somebody like him over Chris Johnson, who had a terrible year last year, even though he got paid, but you know the potential that he can have? I don't know. We'll talk about that in July when we do our fantasy draft stuff prep for everybody. But to my point about Drew Brees, here's what I think is going on in New Orleans. And Tom Benson and Joe Vitt keep saying this, and I'm believing the Kool-Aid. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid because around this time, you're trying to sign your free agents, you're trying to sign your draft picks, and you're trying to clear up space so you can pay other people. So here's what I think is happening, honestly. They keep saying there's no doubt in their mind that Drew Brees is going to be a saint for life, da, 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 and I agree with them because I think what they're trying to do is clear up some cap space after they sign these players. Because if they sign Drew Brees to a big, big contract, and then they still got to get their draft picks signed, there's going to be a problem there with the draft picks as well. It's going to be like, okay, well, how can we structure their contract? Because we just paid Drew Brees X amount of dollars. If they get these kids in and these unrestricted free agents in at a decent price, they can front load a lot of Drew Brees' contract so that he gets the type of money that he deserves and he wants, and wait it out at the end. That's what I think is going to happen with Drew Brees. That's the only reasonable scenario I can see going on as to why they have not paid him, because they want to get these draft picks and all the other people signed at low dollar amounts so they can then take that money and pay Drew Brees. But that's why I have a top three tie, because all three of them are that valuable to their organizations. They need to be paid, and they should be taken care of ASAP. But as I said, in New Orleans, I just think there's a little different twist on it because they want to get him as much money as possible. That's what I think. I might be wrong, but that's my thought process.
I just think that they're in a scramble right now. I mean, because the whole, you know, your head coach is out, your defensive coach is out. You know what I mean? They're going at your GM and stuff like that. I mean, I would be more inclined to give them a pass and to believe what they're saying, because I really believe that they're really, really scrambled. I mean, there's no possible way that you could effectively, if I put myself in the shoes of any one of those people in that front office, I would be scrambling too. You know what I mean? And then on top of that, now my star player is having an issue. I mean, it would warrant me to, you know, to look at that and get that done. But, you know, you've got a 53-man roster that you're trying to put together for the next year, and you got 90 guys coming in. And, you know, I really think that they're just flustered right now. They're on the ropes. but I really believe that they will sign Drew Brees. There's no way that they do not sign that guy. No way.
Yeah,
no
I
way.
Agree. I agree. I just think they're trying to move some money around. That's the way I think about it. But, guys, we got to get ready to get off the air. So what I want to do right now is get parting shots from you guys. Start with you, Mike, Jerry, and then I'm going to end it.
I kind of wanted to ask you guys your thoughts about something I was listening to LeVar Arrington talk about, and he had, and I cannot remember the columnist that he was arguing this with. He was arguing the difference between the most important player on the field and the most important player on the team, right? And the columnist was talking about, was saying that his argument was that RG3 was the most important player on the Redskins team. And LeVar disagreed with him. He was saying that London Fletcher was the most important player on the field. You know
right.
what I mean? And he's
yeah.
the most important player on the team.
Right.
So I just kind of wanted to get you guys thoughts on that before I take a shot.
Okay. You want to go first, Jerry, or I can go first?
You go ahead.
Okay. I agree totally with LeVar. The most important player on that field is going to be London Fletcher because he's the glue to that defense and getting them where they have to be. RG3 is the most important player to the team because he's going to draw fans and money into the organization. He's an unproven product. Once he proves himself as being the leader and the guy that can change the franchise, then you can switch London Fletcher versus RG3. But as of right now, London Fletcher is the most important player on the field. When the season starts, it's going to be the same thing. RG3 is going to be the most important player to the team because this team's success and fan base lies on his shoulders. Again, you got to give this guy some time to take that moniker of being the field general. He hasn't been able to do that because he's a rookie and they haven't signed a contract. But right now, London Fletcher is the most important player on the field.
Right, but I didn't really want you to, you know, to break that part down. I just kind of wanted you guys to look at, you know, just the scenario of it. You know what I'm saying? Because the columnist was talking about, you know, it's a quarterback-driven league, and the quarterback is the most important player on the field. Da da
right.
da da.
I understand what you're saying. Just because one player is the most important person on the team doesn't necessarily mean he's the most important person on the field.
Right.
So even though RG3 is the most important person on the team, he is not the most important person on the field. That
right.
can easily go to someone else, and right now it's London Fletcher. So, yes, you can have two different distinct people with two different distinct importance on the team or on the field. So, just because he's a quarterback doesn't necessarily mean that he carries both titles. It can be two
mm-hmm.
different people to carry the separate titles.
That's like saying Darryl Green was the most important player on the field because he was pretty much a shutdown corner, but on the offensive side of the ball, Ernest Biner or whoever the running back or the quarterback was could have been considered the most important player to the organization.
Well, the thing about it, just because the offensive player is the most important person on the team, and a lot of times the quarterback doesn't necessarily mean the quarterback, but it's a quarterback-driven
yeah.
league, and a lot of times the most important person on the team is the quarterback, just like Tom Brady. Now, and this is different here.
I prematurely hit that. I'm sorry.
Okay. Was that a little twitch of yours? What's going on there? Anyway.
I was moving the laptop, and it hit the button.
Anyway, just the Tom Brady, he's the most important person on the team, and he's the most important person on the field, in my
exactly.
opinion.
So, I agree.
But that's not with every team. You're talking about the Washington Redskins. Two distinct people have two different titles. London Fletcher,
is the field person, field general. RG3 hasn't gotten to that yet, but he's the most important person on the team.
And you know what? And I applaud the coaching because they recognize it and they realize the importance of it. Mm-hmm. Because RG3's locker is right beside London Fletcher. Good
yeah,
God of mine.
You gotta use him as a mentor. I mean that's
yep.
important.
I got a lot of respect for London Fletcher. He's an undersized linebacker, and he leads the NFL for most years in tackles. So I got to give it to my man. Cause
Bam is the man.
He gets the most out of his talent.
Yeah.
Bam exactly. is the man. Shout out to Bam.
All right. What's your parting shot, Mike?
I don't have one. I already had one.
Okay.
Well, wait a minute. I got one.
Mm-hmm.
Tell Mac I said what's up.
You need to call that show on Friday, Slim. Call the show on Friday.
I try to get up on there on a Friday.
They had David Aldridge on there yesterday.
Yeah, I heard. I saw Black Salt sent me the thing on.
Right.
I'll check it out in the archives.
My parting shot is dominance is what dominance does. That's what I do. That's how I roll. You fail to realize the greatness of the master, but it continues to throw it into your face, and you can't deal with it. Anyway, what I'm saying is this. Tune in tomorrow with the master plan at 10 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. Who knows what I'm going to say. Usually it has to do with some sports, but it also has to do with today's issues. And that's about all I have to say right now.
All right, I got to say this. I wasn't going to say it, but I'm going to say it now.
Go ahead.
Just because you're in the lead now doesn't mean you're going to lead at the end. That's dominance, loser. But anyway, I didn't interrupt you. Thank you very much. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, my parting shot is to the young man that was falsely accused. And was convicted on some terrible evidence, and how money can ruin your life even though you ain't even getting the money. How a person can take away someone's life for 10 years and not be prosecuted and spend millions of dollars that somebody gave this individual to put this young man behind bars. While rights being wronged, at least attempted, a young man, I can't remember his last name, but I know his first name is
Brandon.
Brian Banks. He's getting an opportunity on the 6th of June, if I'm not mistaken, to try out with the Seattle Seahawks.
Washington Redskins.
I'm coming.
Yeah.
along with the Kansas City Chiefs and Washington Redskins. Now, this young man was a star middle linebacker or outside linebacker that Pete Carroll had planned on bringing to USC. He had committed to USC. 10 years out of football. And is going to go work with some of the best players prep men in the National Football League to prepare for these tryouts. If this man can get a 1-year contract and just play special teams, that's a victory. That's a small victory for the injustice that he was treated with. It goes to show you, ladies and gentlemen, the prejudice and money and power still corrupt this world.
Somebody paid this young lady X amount of dollars to say that this guy raped her, and he went to jail for it, lost 10 years of his life because 5 years in prison, 5 years on parole. Hopefully this story gets told and with a happy ending with this guy playing in the NFL somewhere, at least for 1 year, getting some type of money. Because he had that type of stuff. But never played never played college ball, never played in a Canadian League arena or nothing. So I hope he gets his shot. And my final parting shot is to Terrell Owens. Hey, Terrell, don't spend that $50 in one place.
What a knucklehead.
If you can't make it in a third-tier arena football league team, hang it up. Because next week I want to talk about, is Terrell Owens a bona fide Hall of Famer? That's what I want to talk about next week. And JT, I might have somebody for you tomorrow, but I'll talk to you about that. Next Sunday, not this Sunday, next Sunday. I'll talk to you about that at some other time.
Okay.
That's my parting shot. So let's get out of here, JT Money.
Well, from Mikhail, myself, and Vic, don't be indecisive. Make that trade happen.
And Black, who's on hold.
And don't show me some kahunas. Don't give me any SNS disease. All right?
Oh, my God.
From all of us, and especially Vic Gardner,